Welcome, folks. We're back. Smoke 'em if you got 'em, as usual, delivering the most hip and the hard to find records. You know, the rules of this thing are pretty simple, and by now you should know them. But here we go once again. You have two numbers ready when you're listening to our show, because we're going to flip this record over and we're going to listen to it. But before we put down the needle, we got to smoke it, because you got to smoke it if you got it. That's how this works. All right. Now, for today's record of choice, we had some information a little bit prior. Vandegraaff Generator. Now, this band is pretty popular, or one of the most popular. And right before we get to discuss this great record, and I'm sorry to keep you holding, Jeremiah, but I got to say thank you to the people of Gerson Records, the band that represents Cosmic Corridors, for allowing us to use their music and allowing us to use the record throughout the video and the podcast. So Gerson Records on Bandcamp, you can catch the show we spoke about yesterday. You know, go in the archive and check it out. So thanks to them. But now on to today's business. For the record of today, I pass the microphone over to the Oracle of Oxford County, Jeremiah Charlton.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we will listen to Pawn Hearts by the great Vandegraaff Generator.
This is a great album.
So, hope you have one rolled up. And let's go on this journey. Remember, put your phones down. Let's get yourself out of the hustle and bustle of everyday life. Listen to the record. And then come back and let's talk about it. Correct?
That's just what it is. Smoke them if you got them.
Smoke them if you got them.
Pawn Hearts. Pawn Hearts.
Lemmings.
Woo!
Lemmings.
We're listening to 1971, is that correct?
Correct.
1971 Vandegraaff Generator. Not the first time I've heard this album, certainly not the last time. But I gotta ask you, what drew you to pick this one out of this vast catalog, right? These dudes have been around forever.
Because of the song that's on side two. But I really like side one too. I mean, we have two songs, Lemmings and Mannerg.
Yeah, Mannerg was my favorite in this side.
Yeah, and Vandegraaff is a very interesting band, because, like you said, they are sort of known, but they're a little bit underground as well. Like they're that interesting point, because they're not Yes. They've never had like songs on the radio, right?
But, no.
But they are sort of known.
Well, it's funny that a band like this, you know, in this world, this art rock sort of world, you know, they've not only returned once, but they've done two reunion shows. So, you know, yes, they are. They tread that line because they're fairly well known, but we're still talking underground stuff. Now, Pawn Hearts 71, how would you describe the sound of Vandegraaff Generator in this era, 1971, so early?
I personally don't like many progressive bands with vocals most of the time.
Yeah, same here.
But I do enjoy Peter Hamill's vocals, because I think he has just a little bit more bass at times and a little strange English growl to it.
Oh, that's a great thing. Peter Hamill, we got to put him over, right? Because
yes,
in terms of vocals for music like this, it's real hard to not be corny as fuck.
Correct.
And yeah,
exactly. That's very hard, right? And then it's interesting, they're on Charisma, right? Which was the album that the same company that Genesis was on.
Yeah.
And Peter Gabriel's so famous.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have Peter Hamill, who reminds me a little bit of him, but they have different tonal qualities.
Yeah, I mean, I love Peter Gabriel, but you know,
so do I.
I'll go on record, but Genesis with him on vocals is not my it's not something that I'm going to run to put on, you know. Peter Hamill, on the other hand, has a lot of that rawness, you know, the grittiness you're talking about, that English growl, whatever. It works out really, really well. Now, in terms of music, this band has so many cool things that they prepared to make albums like this, including a Mellotron that was completely modded out circuitry-wise and a couple of synthesizers. But I think, you know, we have to talk about this from the get-go, because it happens in the first track. Robert Fripp is part of this recording.
Yes, that's true. It's a strange sort of appearance, because he's not like really... you wouldn't know it's Robert Fripp, back to me, you know? Like, it's not hitting you over the head.
No, no, no. And it's not even a standout performance. He's even credited as just like an additional performer. But it's interesting with this record, Pawn Hearts, 1971. You know, it sticks to the usual sound that they've created, which is organ bass, long extended jams, figuring out parts as they go along, you know, relaxed in a rock setting. But doesn't this feel like a concept album?
Yes, because the long, again, reminds me of Genesis in a way, because of that, the long songs, the development, and the fact they have vocals, it's easier to see the development in the songs because of the melodies, I find, compared to instrumental prog is a little bit, can be a little bit harder to tell. It's more morphs slowly.
And that's, if there's any band that really like that pushes on that, is Van de Graaff Generator.
Pretty powerful for a four-piece, correct?
Incredibly powerful for a four-piece. Super influential band, you know.
Lifetime. No bass player. Word.
No bass player. I was going to say, we're talking about a four-piece without a bass. But still, the bass is present in everything that they do. And, you know, this magnanimous thing that moves has a lot of bass.
So who was your favorite player on the side, first side? Like, one instrument stood out? Was it organ? Was it the sax or the drums?
I really like I like the use of the saxophone, because it really expands on what they're building on. But the organ took it from me, man. Like, the organ from the get-go. The organ, you know, the last three albums that you've brought to Smoke 'Em If You Got 'Em have been synth and organ driven, and it's really speaking to me in a different way. You know, it's such a full body presence.
Did you know that the saxophone player, David Jackson, he does like the Rasan role in Kirk, where he plays multiple horns at the same time?
Did not know that. Oh, that's exciting.
He harmonizes with himself. Yeah.
Wow.
That's and he really put, exciting. And he would put effects on his horns too. So it would be so powerful. There's some really good Van de Graaff live footage out there, folks.
Yeah, we got to dig on more of this, but you know what? You know what we got to do.
It's time to turn that baby over, and you gotta smoke another one.
Yeah, we've already talked about this.
Yeah, you're supposed to be prepared. If not, pause, prepare, come back.
Yeah, no rush for that, because you know, the deal here is that we're focusing on the music. We stop what we're doing. We focus on the music with open hearts and open ears. And try to get something new that, you know, or maybe something that you've forgotten that you heard at one point. And today is Van de Graaff Generator's Pawn Heart, 1971. Available everywhere.
Lots of available options, folks.
Yeah. So, you know, let them know.
Let's go, folks. Smoke if you got them.
Mm-hmm.
We're back. This was the track. This is what I told you. This is the reason why I want to listen to this album. A Plague of Lighthouse Keepers.
Incredible track.
Yes.
Expand on it, please.
Well, it's 23 minutes. It's like so many parts. And they come back too, right? And there's speaking, I said earlier about live Van de Graaff footage, there's an incredible performance of them doing Plague of Lighthouse Keepers in great quality.
They've been doing this song as a staple. I mean, they've gotten off the road after their last album, but they keep on doing that song. 23 minutes of it, not a bridge, no nothing. They do the 23 minutes even as a trio now. So you know, it's a very complex tune, and even though this is a fairly normal name that you would find in any classic rock magazine or prog rock, you know, it's hard to pinpoint songs. This is so Van de Graaff. Nothing else sounds like this particular song for them.
This is their tour de force.
Yeah, this is peak. This is total peak.
Yeah, I agree. So great. There's the one, and it builds, right? Yeah. Like it builds through these different patches. But there's one, I don't know which one it would be called, honestly, off the top of my head. I know it's broken up, but it's where it gets really complicated, really busy. And that's where I was like, man, I can't believe they play this part live. Because we go back to one thing to play it on the record, but to play it live, that's changes really the whole game. Hard.
Yeah.
Not easy to play that, folks. And powerful.
Yeah. It doesn't lose anything because of the complexity, which is also Hamill's super vocals, hard to do.
Hamill's vocals, like I said earlier, this one's like so great on this track.
Yeah, Peter Hamill really, man, it's a specific voice. Again, it's so easy to be corny as fuck with this sort of music, with those vocals, and for somebody to, especially a vocalist, to maneuver 23 minutes, right? It's cool.
Yeah, I have an original pressing of this.
Oh,
so
that's wonderful. Let's run some stats over this recording.
Well, there's 71 issues of it, so plenty of different available copies out there. Wow. I have like an original Canadian pressing, but you can get even an original UK pressing for fairly cheap. Like I'd say $40, $50.
Wow.
But there's a
lot of repressings.
Yes. And so that's just like charisma just kept on putting it out, you know?
Yeah.
That's incredible. I think that's probably the most we've had of repressings, correct?
Yeah, so far.
It's gotta be up there.
You know, and this,
maybe another one.
What do you think of the artwork on this record?
I don't like the artwork that much, personally.
It's weird. It's, yeah.
It doesn't pop. It doesn't, the picture doesn't pop off the page, son.
Yeah, and there's nothing that really ties the tone of the music. It looks like an overview of the globe, and there's like these, you're seeing it if you're watching the video feed, but it's a strange thing that doesn't really even fit with 1971. It doesn't even look like any of the
horrible.
Other records. It's not horrible, but it doesn't align well with the product inside of the album.
Doesn't pop. Yeah. Doesn't pop like that Noi or that Faust cover.
Yeah, actually, you know, there's two bands that we've covered here in Smoke If You Got 'Em on the archive. If you haven't heard them, go back and check it out. That I would invite you to go and look and listen. The Gentle Giant record, what was the Italian one? Marconi Fornio.
Oh, PFM.
PFM. Thank you. Yeah. Those two records, Gentle Giant and PFM, feel really familiar with this album.
I agree. And yeah. they all had, like, now Octopus has different album covers by Gentle Giant. So there's certain ones I really like. But that's probably the one. But the PFM, I didn't like that album cover either. And it's similar to this. And similar art, too.
Yeah, there's something happening there.
This is great. So you brought this up. How I found out about Vandergraaff Generator was my buddy who was this drummer, who's an old prog head, worked at the music store, and his name was Ray, and he hit me to PFM. I think I told the story about that, right?
Yeah.
Well, through PFM, I found out that Vandergraaff Generator was wildly popular in Italy. When that prog craze was happening,
yeah,
that's when Vandergraaff was like on top. And so that's where like they sell most of the records in Italy.
Yeah, it's they, you know,
that's strange.
Well, it's also the one place that they constantly went back to either do live DVDs or live records. You know, actually the last album put out for this band is a live reunion of the second reunion as a trio in Italy. They maintained that but again, the band could always produce. It's like you're saying, if you go back, go to the tape and look at the tape, and they were able to do it live too, which is a big thing for records that last and acts that last.
And also I would say to folks, if you like this is another good deep dive band that you can go on. And they don't have too many weak records. Their first record, I'd say probably stay away from that one.
Yeah.
Besides their very first record, they're pretty good all the way up to the 70s. I really like God Bluff, H the E. There's a lot of good Vandergraaff albums. So if you like this one, continue on that journey. You won't be burned.
Yeah, there's tons of there's three different eras, and they were very active when it came to music. So
and even their newest album sounds good, like not maybe the live one, but whatever the actual album they put out.
The one before, the one 2008, I believe.
Yeah, that's
they
a good
put
album
it.
Too.
They put it right out after they got their Lifetime Achievement Award from the BBC and Rock Gods deal, and they still kicked it. Now, I received two emails over at the noiseonport@gmail.com, and they were both good questions.
All right.
And one is from Macedonia.
Okay.
I'm not even going to try to say your name, but Macedonia, what up? And another one from Italy. So from Italy, the first question is, let me grab it up here. Here it is. For the Oracle, how did you get into collecting records? How did you get into collecting records? And this is from somebody who's wanting to start building a collection. So there you go. Okay.
All right. Well, I have horrible news for you. You've picked the worst time to start collecting records. because if this was like maybe a year or more ago, that statement would be completely true.
Yeah.
Now, because of the pandemic and probably the global recession that we're all heading towards and the Mad Max life that we're about to probably in the next couple of years, depending on what happens.
Yeah.
But besides that, now what you can do, if you have some money over there in Italy, now's the time to strike. Because guess what? That poor musician, he ain't got no gigs. He's going to start selling them records, and then you're going to buy those records.
There you go.
That's my advice to him. Now, why did I get involved in it? It was the opposite. I got in when records were – it was the absolute best time because I graduated high school in year 2000, moved out. You know, I was 19, living on my own. So, and I was a musician, had no money. Was obsessed with music and learning about music. And this time, so we're talking like 2001, CDs were still very expensive and people were still buying CDs starting the end of that, but people were still buying them. And then they were like, what, over $20 a pop, weren't they, back then?
Yeah, right?
And even more sometimes. If it was a double CD, forget about it. So back then, people were like just giving vinyl away. So I started my collection very luckily, because I would just go in and I got like my biggest score ever. I remember I got Mahavishnu Vishnu Orchestra Intermounting Flame original pressing. It was in the 3 for 99 cent bin.
Incredible.
So original ECMs of Keith Jarrett for, you know, $5.
Sometimes you just get lucky and you find $8. Those that you're supposed to get into.
And just what I was looking now, if I'd have known what I know now about music back then, I would have really cleaned up house, you know, but I was young and dumb and all.
But you learn as you go.
But that's my advice. So right now, if you got some cash, I would say stay away from record stores in general, unless they have sales, which they might be having sales because of this situation too. Look online, look at any... I don't know if they'll be doing any record fairs lately. That's the other thing. So I would say just look online, look for personal collections, see if people are selling things, and you could get some good deals.
Well, there you go. There you go.
And look then, at Discogs is a good reference point. If you look at their medium price for things, the records, if you're in a store, that should be around that price generally.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Macedonia.
And then Macedonia.
The main event. The main event.
The question here, this is a great question. He goes, what is the record? What is the artist you most collect on long play? So what LP. Vinyl do you have the most?
Oh, it's Keith Jarrett. I have a lot of Keith Jarrett.
How much and why Keith Jarrett?
I have 46 Keith Jarrett albums.
You sick bastard. You're a sick human being.
46, folks. 46 LPs.
And that's not a real full collection, right?
No, he has over 100.
Like, that's crazy.
Now, I don't think all 100. I don't think all hundreds are available on LP.
Sure.
But I have 46 on LP. I have a lot of Zappa. I have close. I mean, I showed G recently my Zappa collection.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to play the video of the records dropping down because they dropped.
But that's in the high 20s, I'd say.
Right.
I don't think I have 30 Zappas, but it's over 20 for sure. And again, Zappa has lots too. I collect John McLaughlin. I have a lot of his.
Don't forget the second part to that was, why is Keith Jarrett the artist you rep the most?
Wow.
That's the important question here.
Keith Jarrett is just a little genius, I think. I think he's a real, and that term gets thrown around a lot.
Usually these days.
In general, way too much. And I truly think Keith Jarrett is a genius, even among other great jazz musicians, piano players, let's say Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea, all those greats who I love too, McCoy Tyner.
Yeah.
I still think Keith is a different level, even above all those guys. So that's why. And it's his ability to improvise. If you don't know about Keith Jarrett, he can improvise whole entire concerts and can go anywhere he wants.
Yeah.
And they record every single one of his concerts professionally, ECM, like Manfred Eicher himself. And if you guys know about ECM recording quality, it's there.
Yeah, it's the top of the line, the most high quality of high quality. And it's a label run by musicians for musicians.
I think when Keith Jarrett dies, it'll sort of be like everything's coming out.
Yeah.
You know, because they have recorded every single one of his concerts with high fidelity he's ever done.
Yeah, that's real impressive since
let's say like the mid-70s.
Well, I mean, that's the answer to that question. So Keith Jarrett, Zappa, and John McLaughlin.
A lot of John McLaughlin.
The top three. So that. I hope that answers the question. And folks, if you got any questions for the Oracle, myself, for the show, any of that stuff, you can hit us up through the Facebook, or you can hit me up at noiseonport@gmail.com, and we'll talk about it. Suggestions, questions, comments, you know, they're all welcomed. We're on YouTube, we're on Facebook. And you know what the deal is, but as I look at our time, we're just running out of it, brother.
So, where do you want to go tomorrow?
Tomorrow, we're going to Italy.
Going back to Italy, okay.
We're going back to Italy because you know, that question hit me in a good way. So, we're going back to Italy tomorrow.
We shall go back to Italy. And we'll make it unlike our last Italian, which was PFM. We've gone to Italy twice, right? Franco Battatio.
Yeah.
Season one. PFM, we'll go back. We'll pick something nice for everyone.
There you go. Treat them good.
All right, folks. Smoke if you got them.
Peace.